Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read. As I read it, there's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
Like normal, you're back again.
I am back.
I mean, we're both back. Here we go. A book that I've read that you've not read.
Yes.
Got two reading projects on at the moment. One, which is the SFBRP must reads list, where I'm rereading lots of books which I know are good or I rated highly in the past to see if they will remain on the SFBRP must reads list.
Yes.
Our, like,
if they hold up.
Our like masterworks list, our canon, you know, our deep dive into science fiction list. And there's other books which I can't do that with. I can't reread again because they only came out last year. So that's what I've been doing. I've been like at the end of last year, I compiled a list of books which came out in 2025, which lots of other people were saying, hey, this is a good book this year.
Okay.
And I've added to it a bit since then, because then there's awards come out, you know, award, you know, shortlist.
And nominations.
Yeah, and books are nominated here and books are nominated there. So there's lots of books that I've read and reviewed in the last 6 months, and some lots of books that I've read and noped out of.
Yeah.
For example, Anibot, I was like, nope. And I don't think we did an episode about that. But then there was The Everlasting by Alex Harrow. I didn't finish that one, but we did do an episode about it.
Yeah.
So what will this be? Well, of course, I already know. We're doing an episode about it. So yes. I finish this book? The book is There Is No Antimimetics Division by Quantum, which the author name is Q-N-T-M.
Now this
I saw people saying this is the best book I read last year, and I was like, yeah, but that's an old book, that's an old story, because I knew it was actually published in 2020 and 2021,
but
it was like self-published, or it didn't have a full publisher, you know.
I see.
So it was a self-published or internet published,
right?
And then it's been updated to to a standard where the author, who is actually, his name is Sam Hughes, who was born in 1983. He's British. He's an author and he's a programmer. And he writes science fiction, it says here on Wikipedia. Yeah.
Okay, that's a good starting point for a book that could interest you.
Yeah, well, sure. But what it really is that when a book is self-published, you're like, okay, that's a signal that, you know, and it gets some buzz. You hear about it. You hear people, you see people chatting about it. Maybe it was recommended by some SFBRP listener. But then it gets picked up by a publisher and gets republished, and you're like, oh, now I understand why people are talking about it more now at the end of 2025, even though I heard it for the first time. You know, people talked about it like 2-3 years ago.
Yes.
And then it gets nominated for awards. So if you check out this is the Arthur C. Clarke Award here.
Yeah.
Although I don't know why, but they put this website, everything is in capital letters. So I'm just going to go up here. Oh. Let me click show reader. Oh, that's so much better. Look at that. When I click the show reader in Safari, it's actually readable. So we have on this list, we have The Salt Oracle. Don't know that. Never heard about that. The Dream Hotel. Don't know about that one. Dungeon Crawler Carl, which has got a lot of buzz, and people have actually mentioned you should read that. So I might add that to the to read list as well. But then there's two other books. When There Were Wolves Again.
We know that.
Which we read
it.
And we both really enjoyed that one.
Yes.
Luminous by Sylvia Park. Also, I read that, gave it 5 stars. Rare 5-star rating from review. Yeah. So the only two other books on the Arthur C. Clarke Award for this year, for books that came out last year, but it's the 2026 Arthur C. Clarke Award. So two books I've read on there, thumbs up. Another book, There Is No Antimimetics Division. I'm like, okay, let's give it a go.
Okay, looks promising.
And so it's time to talk about There Is No Antimimetics Division.
Actually, I know you've got notes and such, but I'm mostly interested in the title. The title is interesting.
It's a really good, if you hear this title, it's going to catch you, because it's like the meta title.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like when a book refers to a book, or when a game refers to a game, it's like Untitled Goose Game. You're like, okay, the title of the game is referring to the title of the game.
Yes.
That it doesn't have a title, but it does have a title. The title is Untitled Goose Game.
Yes.
So,
in a way that paintings can be called untitled.
No, absolutely the opposite way around. Oh. More like there's a children's book called There Is a Monster at the End of This Book. Have you heard about this book?
No.
It says the title of the book is there is a monster at the end of the book. And as you read through the book, there's going to be a monster. What is the monster at the end of the book okay. going to be?
All right.
Do you understand that?
Yes.
It's not just that it doesn't have a title. It's that it is about not having a title.
Okay.
You know what I mean? The title is about not having a title rather than it just not having a title.
Right.
And there is no anti-mimetics division is... It's like a meta title for a book. You know, this book could be called The Anti-Mimetics Division.
Yes.
Because it is about the anti-mimetics division of an organization.
Yeah.
But if it was just called the Anti-Mimetics Division, it would be like people would go, oh, that's a difficult story. But that there is no anti-mimetics division. Suddenly you're like,
it already implies
it's
things.
Already implying what's going on here.
And then it piques your interest because you want to know about it.
Yeah.
Now.
So weirdly enough, I have actually come across the works of Sean Hughes before.
Right.
Because it says here on his Wikipedia page, this is Quantum, you know, it's published under the, you know, it's his internet handle.
Quantum.
Not a valid Scrabble word. So anyway, Quantum is, I guess, an online handle on a website.
Yeah.
But what I know him from is computer games, his little puzzle games that he writes, which again are plays on other people. So one is what is it? Hatress. Which is an old Tetris variation, which always gives you the worst piece. It programmatically goes, what's the one piece I can give you which will result in the fewest lines?
Yes, and we just played it, and it
is
horrible.
Well, I showed it to you.
I played it
years ago, like 50. Well, it came out in 2010, so I don't know when I played it, but it was a long time ago. Yeah. I was like... and then he did another game called Absurdle, which is a Wordle derivative of the same idea, mm-hmm. that when you type in letters, it looks at the letters, gives you correct hints, mm-hmm. but only gives you, it always changes the word.
Mm.
So the easiest example, so at the end of a word, mm-hmm. if it says taking, and you're like, well, of course it's taking because, you know, it has to be a five-letter word. Either way, so it could be taking, raking, faking, making, and everyone that you try, if there's another alternative available, it gives you, like it says, the other alternative is now the correct one and doesn't let you guess. If you guess and there's two options, you always guess wrong.
Oh, no.
And if there's four options, you always guess three times wrong and then get the last one. Get the last one. So it's a game about restricting the possibilities that the game can tell you that you're wrong about.
Okay. Wow.
You have to find the most unique word as soon as possible. And these are deterministic games. Anyway, so I know him from some of his dumb game ideas that he puts out. But then he's done some short stories, online fiction. And then it says here, there is no anti-mimetics division. It came out, he began writing it in 2008. He completed it in 2020. Mm-hmm. And there was a 2025 rewrite.
Right.
So why was this book started in 2008? Why did it take him 12 years to write this novel? I went into this book not knowing any of this, by the way. I didn't know that Quantum was Sean Hughes. I didn't know that I played any of his computer games.
Yep.
Because somebody said, the less you know about it going in, the better.
Okay.
These are not facts that are important.
So everybody who just listened to that now, we should have made a disclaimer.
No. I literally just said, none of these facts are about the book itself.
Okay.
The only thing that's relevant is that I said that Quantum is probably an online handle.
Yes.
You know.
Sounds like a hacker name.
Whatever like that. So anyway, so put all that aside. I just wanted to set it up. This guy, you know, mm-hmm. British, you know, 3 years younger than me, whatever like that. So I went into this book and straight away I was thinking, this is definitely somebody's first novel. And this is not a bad thing. This is not a bad thing because, well, in some ways it's a bad thing. In other ways it's a good thing.
Okay.
Because the good thing about somebody's first novel is that they're like, all of the ideas are going right in here. And
yes.
There's a freshness to a first novel,
yeah.
which is really fun, where they're like, I'm not going to stick to the rules of like character development. I'm just going to introduce someone and just be like, ah, fuck it, then move on. And then here's a person. Do they die? Don't they? Doesn't matter. Move on to the next thing. Here's another like scene or chapter of it. There's like a freeness. And here's a crazy idea and it's worth, you know, like one chapter, like 15 minutes of storytelling in the audiobook. And we move on. And here's another bit. And then it's sort of like, oh yeah, I guess we need to have like a story and a recurring character. Or let's bring some of this. And it's really fun to read someone like piecing together their first novel. And this is, again, I've read many people's first novels, and you can kind of tell that their first novels by the almost overwhelming number of ideas that go into it. Yeah. And you're like, if you were an established author, you'd be saving some of these novels, like some of these ideas for another novel. Like, yeah. But this is a good thing. Like Luminous by Sylvia Park also had that kind of stuff. Like, what's the book about? It's like, yes, it's about everything. It's about gender. It's about, you know, robots. It's about autonomy. It's about life. It's about what history, grieving, war, post-traumatic, you know. It's a book and it can be about everything. Whereas I do think like authors who've got more of a handle on ideas can like they narrow it down and go, okay, it's about these things and everything wraps around. So, you know, there's like a neatness to an established author coming up with this. This is not a neat novel.
However, it is a tight slope, I think, to write a first novel, put all the ideas in, because it can also go catastrophically wrong.
And that's the other thing is, as you get later in the book, you're like, how well can this author land their first novel? And there are some people who just don't do it. They run out and they're like, well, it'll be answered in the sequel. And you're like, I trust you even less. If you can't wrap up the story in the end of the first one, I don't mind, wrap up the story, leave some open ends for the next novel or whatever like that. But if you're just like, we mentioned these, and this happens in TV shows all the time.
Yes.
You know, you're like,
you have the pilot episode.
Well, the pilot episode can be really good. And then you get on and you get to the end and you're like, they don't actually know what the end of the story is. And we're just going to end season one. And it's very rare where there's like a proper arc that goes
on. Yeah, it's true.
So anyway, the bad thing about a first novel is that the author, like an author in this way, will often take too many shortcuts in a way. And I guess some of this might have been edited out for this 2025 version.
Mm.
But like, if you're writing what this is, some kind of like horror, psychological horror, body horror, spooky horror kind of thing.
Okay.
There are things you should set, you could say, which is how an established author would write it. They would set the scene using words which are available in the scene itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get other people which would just be like, oh, you know, like a kaiju. And you're like, you can't just say kaiju. Like,
That?
Well, it's like one of the big monsters, you know, Godzilla.
Like Godzilla,
You know, a multiple, like the size of a 50-story building is suddenly, it's a monster, is now a kaiju. Okay. They come out of the ocean, you know, like a Pacific Rim, you know, like the Godzilla, especially like the monsters that Godzilla fights.
Yes.
Like kaiju.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Like, I see.
That kind of.
So they're using words to trigger things in the reader's mind about.
Like, so like, hey, you all know what kaiju are.
Yeah.
Like a kaiju.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh. And another time, because, you know, it's talking about like memories of stuff. It's like fruits. Oh, maybe I wrote down the wrong thing. But fruits. It's a thing. Oh, it's an already existing thing which makes you forget about it. And so, and at one point they're like, oh yeah, like the X-Files. And I'm like, okay, if we're talking about investigating paranormal stuff, you know, and spooky things like that, it's like, you can't just be like, oh, we're like the X-Files because we're two agents going around and investigate. It's like, it's sort of like, hey, you know this popular culture thing, a bit like that. And this happens time and time and time again in authors who are, you know, either like it's a first novel, it's an early novel, or they're just a shit writer who doesn't care better, you know, care more than that.
Yeah.
So
it's those... to me, it always feels like lazy writing, because you rely on your target audience to, first of all, know what you're saying, and also you are leaving out the description that you have in your head and using words to describe it.
Well, here's the thing. For some people, it's lazy writing, but it's like a sign of lazy writing or bad writing in the style of, you know, Ready Player One by whoever wrote Ready Player One. Because he was just sort of like, oh yeah, you've all seen like Pac-Man or whatever, like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like, just imagine that the ghost is coming for you. And you're like, oh, so you're saying, remember what it felt like to play Pac-Man? Now this character is in the same situation as Pac-Man with a ghost coming after them. Imagine what that feels like. Have you got that? Great. You know.
Yeah.
And others are like, hey, it was like the set of a 1960s, like the set of a 1960s sci-fi show.
Yeah,
kind
Star
of thing.
Trek.
Yeah, it's sort of like, hey, you've seen Star Trek. Yeah. Yeah, a bit like that. A bit like a shit TV show from the 1960s, but it's got a cult following. And you're like, oh, you can't just say a bit like, you know.
So I'm assuming by the way you're describing it, it is set in our world and our time,
I'll get to that. Because I'm going through all the things that I was picking up from the book without actually describing what's in the book. Because again, people say the less you know going in, the better. Yes. And these are things which are like now meta about the story, like the storytelling and stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing is what it is very, is it's very internet.
Okay.
Is what I noticed. I felt this is very first novel, but it's also very like internet fan fiction style of writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like picking up on the things which, you know, like, like online horror stuff like a Slender Man and like these other kind of things, which if you're like, you're just, again, you're just on a slightly different part of the internet. Now, I'm not on 4chan and I'm not on these other places, but these things bubble up from 4chan and other online places and bubble around the rest of the internet. And you see the memes and you're like, what? Like that character, like that meme character is now a character.
Okay.
And because this is about mimetics and anti-mimetics, it is referencing like internet-y kind of stuff.
Right.
But it isn't just referencing internet like stuff on the internet. It is treating ideas in its world as though they are things which spread in the real world in the same way that memes spread online.
Okay. Like, this obviously is way too deep into that topic for me because I don't know what mimetics and anti-mimetics are.
Okay, do you know what a meme is?
Yeah, I know what a meme is.
Okay, a meme is something which is replicated because it's a meme is from the word gene, so genetics and mimetics. So a gene is a bit of information, but it's a combination of DNA molecules or whatever.
Yes.
You know, put it together. The genes go in the chromosomes go in the cell or whatever, and that's what helps it reproduce. A meme is a unit of information which has self-replicating properties. So when you say a meme generator, the thing that's being generated isn't a copy of the meme generator, it's the meme that is being generated.
Yes.
Which means that the unit of information which is the meme is the thing which is replicating. It is using a meme generator to replicate itself. It is providing benefit to communication systems and idea systems around the world. And in that way is a unit of information which is self-replicating.
Right.
That's what a meme is.
Okay.
And a meme can be a joke. If I say to you, knock, knock.
Who's there?
Exactly. That is like a meme. It's like a unit of information that is helpful to people who need to communicate. Like, I want to do a dumb wordplay joke. I could just do a dumb wordplay joke and it's called a dad joke.
Yeah.
But if I put it into a knock, knock format, knock, knock, who's there format, it becomes an actual joke.
Yes.
Which then can be not just, oh, we happen to be in this situation and I say a dumb pun.
Yeah.
That's a dad joke. A knock, knock joke. It's like context-free dad joke. Like the knock-knock establishes its own context.
Yes.
So,
but you kind of need to know, like the knock-knock is kind of like the key to the thing.
Yeah.
So you need to have some sort of background knowledge the whole thing.
And that's the thing. A meme really works if you know two bits of context. One, you have seen that meme before and you know what kind of thing it's trying to express.
Yeah.
And two, you know the situation that the updated version of that meme is referring to.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah?
Yes.
And so that is what a meme is.
And the meme is, I mean, it's written different, right? Is it M-E-E-M-E?
No, M-E-M-E.
M-E-M-E. Oh,
is
okay.
It? Isn't it? A meme?
Yeah. You're right. M-E-M-E.
Let's just do a quick meme. A meme.
Yes.
A meme acts as a unit for carrying cultural ideas, symbols, or practices.
Yes. Okay. So mimetics. So what I'm saying is
that this book is not a book about the internet, but it is a book which has so many internet ideas into it that it can't help feel like the internet. And this is the reason why he started writing it in 2010 or 2008, because just so you know, and this is again not too much about the story, but this is the background of the writing of it. It started as a collection of fictional entries onto a wiki, like a wiki website for a fictional organization, which looks up and catalogs weird stuff out in the world.
Okay, I see.
So when this is then written up into a fictional novel, mm-hmm. it's not just now a series of posts. It's sort of like, so it feels like a series of Wikipedia pages, which are then like the knowledge of Wikipedia, you know, and this is the kind of like wikiization of fiction, you mm-hmm. know, like things, there's a canon, there's a way of that everything works. You know, you go into, you know, fan wiki or Star Wars wiki or whatever these
wikis are.
They're like collections of knowledge. And this started, or like the ideas in this book started off as a collection of fictionalized strange occurrences around the world.
Okay.
Which are being catalogued by a fictional organization.
Okay, that makes sense. And I would assume what makes it as something, a Wikipedia thing, is also the interlinked things, so that there's like things that refer to each other.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And again, the information can spread around those. So
all
of this is to say mm-hmm. that I was getting very unique vibes from this book.
Mm-hmm.
First novel, online novel, interesting novel, novel about ideas and about how ideas are transmitted and the internet and all that kind of stuff. Also, it feels like now, it was finished in 2020.
Yeah.
This feels like a very COVID / post-COVID lockdown novel, which I could get into more, but I don't think I need to move it now. But it is really interesting to see this kind of stuff coming out along in fiction, where you read it and you go, wait a second, when was this novel written? And you were like, oh, it was finished. He finished writing it in 2020.
It was a lockdown novel. Yeah,
it
that
comes
in
out
itself
long.
Is kind of a meme as well, because you need to have this knowledge of
It's not explicit in here.
And I guess this gap, 2008, 2020, then makes so much sense, because the pandemic, we were all sitting around thinking like, oh, our lives is, in your case, reduced to no work. In my case, reduced to only work because you couldn't do any of the hobbies. So that meant some people were sitting at home thinking like, oh, what else can I do inside my home?
Which is write a book.
Which is
but it's not just I'm writing a book now in lockdown.
It's like I open my drawer.
I'm saying that there are some very, very specific things that are mentioned at the end of this book.
Okay.
Which, if this is only in the 2025 version and it's not in the 2020 version, I'd be like, yeah, he added this because of COVID.
Yes.
I'm going to take a sip of my tea.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm. Talking about, I know going into the context, content might be a bit more tricky, but I have another question about this, because I've been sitting here looking. Oh no. Luke tried to speak at the same time. And
and speak at the same time. Yes. It ends up into a burp.
So what I've tried to say, on the Goodreads page, you get to see the different kinds of covers for this book.
Yeah.
And there's obviously two distinct kind of covers. And I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, this is the Penguin. This is like the latest version, which is because this was just released end of last year.
Okay.
11th of November last year. This is the Penguin version.
It has like
version.
A deer on it.
Yeah, it's got a deer.
Like in front of a
don't know, doesn't really
sunset
have, but then
sky.
This one here is a big like block. You know, these are trees
like
down here. So it's
it
a
looks
very,
like the Melbourne building, the big black, you know, the, that...
the black stump that's in Adelaide. No, it's like a big...
monolith.
Monolith, that's the word you're trying to say here. Yeah, and this monolith comes up on these... on the international versions here as well.
That's interesting.
So all of that to say is, did I enjoy this book? Here's the thing. I really enjoyed reading this book. However, there are some things which don't gel very well.
Mm-hmm.
The pacing is a bit weird
mm-hmm.
and all of that. But it is, again, and you can tell this, it is a collection of lots of short stories and short entries which have been collected together into a novel-length piece of fiction.
Right.
Which that you could say, is this a novel or is this... you know, like a collection of shorter works.
Yes.
But I think it is a novel, but it shows this was a serialized collection of shorter works.
This is actually interesting, because in the literally the last podcast we did.
The War of the Worlds.
The War of the Worlds.
Yeah, I was talking about
the
same thing.
We had exactly the same kind of conversation.
Yeah, so those issues do come through when somebody is like taking... What am I trying to say? What was
that noise? Washing machine.
Oh, it's the washing machine. So people, someone is taking like lots of different ideas mm-hmm. and kind of putting them together in that way.
Yeah.
It shows the gap show, the pacing, like I say. And also just as it starts off, you're like, is there going to be like, does this lead to something? It does lead to something and it is satisfying. I thought it was satisfying, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. You have to work hard to get there.
Okay.
Let me put it that way.
Okay. And do you have to work hard or do you have to be the right person to get there?
No, I think if you just keep reading it, you will get there.
Okay.
Keep reading it and you will get there.
Yeah.
But it does get quite philosophical in a really fun way by near the end as it gets deeper. So let's just say I'm going to give this book 3.5 stars, maybe 4 stars. I'll decide by the end, but 4 stars. I think it is worth reading.
Yeah.
And I totally understand why for the last few years people have been talking about this book mm-hmm. and then it got picked up by a publisher mm-hmm. and now it's got awards.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff to chew on in here, which I will now get into after the spoiler horn.
So go and read this book.
If you want the experience that I did, well, I mean, I have talked a lot about it, but I'm now going to get into some story stuff mm-hmm. and setup stuff and theme stuff and conclusion stuff.
Ooh.
So here we go. Spoiler horn. There you go. Spoiler horn. Right.
That's long enough.
This book is doing the same thing as Men in Black, which is really fun. In that you have these, well, it's not doing the same thing. One of the things that is doing is Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
That there's weird shit that goes on and some people know about it.
And most people is unnoticed.
Most people don't know about it.
Right.
So if there's weird shit that comes up and you're not meant to know about it, there are lots of, as the book goes on, it's revealed there are more than one way. There's more than one way to make somebody forget about something.
Mm-hmm.
Or you yourself can decide, should I forget about this?
And amnesia.
Yeah, so you can do selective amnesia on yourself. And there's different ways of doing it. There's like a device which does it.
Yeah.
There's like drugs that do it. There's like a monster that you can stick on your head, which you look through and stuff, and it absorbs the memories of the stuff. So you're still thinking, but none of the memories are going into you. There's spirit monsters, like, you know, which hang out and feed on your memories so you can remember stuff. If it's like, nom, 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 I want to feed them. If you just remember some stuff in front of it, it'll pluck those memories out of your head. You won't remember them anymore.
Oh, that's fun.
You know, so it's a lot. It's a big book. I mean, it's a book which is big on what it means to forget things.
Okay.
And we see this happening in the first few chapters is like establishing the rules for this. There's this really fun one, which is sort of like, it's my first day here and I'm being chased by a monster. And
mm-hmm.
and there's a really fun scene where you go into this room and you access a computer record and it says, oh, you're now the 70th person who has encountered this monster, which nobody else remembers encountering.
Yeah.
It might kill you. Here's what I tried to do. And if somebody else is after me, I didn't defeat the monster and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And so at the end it says, if you're here, please increment this number by one. And he's like, 71. And so I'm like, write down what you're going to try to do to defeat this monster. I'm going to try and like think really hard. Okay, yeah. And so so this is what I'm saying. It feels like some of these early chapters feel like I'm now reading a Wikipedia page about this.
Yeah.
Not a Wikipedia. I'm now reading a wiki page, which is a collection of other people's like knowledge together. And the character in the book literally reads a file which is a wiki, but only the people who have encountered this monster so far can access that file.
Right.
And everybody who's accessed the monster so far hasn't, I mean, the monster still exists, so he hasn't been defeated.
Okay.
And the character who you're with, how are they going to defeat the monster? Are they going to defeat the monster? And why have those 70 people, like, why has nobody noticed it? It's because the monster itself makes everybody else forget that those people were ever there.
Oh my God, is
just
very
an early
meta.
Chapter.
Yeah,
of
it's good.
What can storytelling mean when it's all forgetful? You know, it's like the memento kind of thing. Like you're seeing somebody who doesn't know it, so you as a reader can know what they don't know. But then if you're so close to them, it's sort of like, oh, you don't know. And it's sort of like, he's sort of like, oh, fuck it. It's on my first day at work and I've got to do this. And and then when he does it, And it's sort of like, no, this wasn't your first day at work. It's just the monster made you forget that you've actually been here for like 10 years and you're like the best guy. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, he wasn't. In fact, that's one of the things here. It says, this is the blurb about it.
On Audible.
How do you contain something you can't record or remember? How do you fight against an enemy with effortless, perfect camouflage when we can never even know that you're at war? Welcome to the anti-mimetics division. No, this is not your first day.
Yes.
So it's like, welcome. No, you've been here before. So this is what's going on a lot in these early chapters of this book. It's laying out the groundwork that there's a mimetics division, which is called the organization. Actually, let me go to Wikipedia because it actually says here. The development of this, it started on the SCP wiki, and the SCP wiki is the Project SCP, what is it? It's called the Special Containment Procedures. So it's like an online creative writing exercise of lots of people submitting things to these like things around the world that you need special procedures to investigate, to kill, to capture, to work with, to defeat, whatever it is.
Yes.
So this is what this started off with. He was writing about these weird things. And then he started writing about things that made you forget them.
Oh, right.
So that's what a lot of these early things are. So, so it started off in that book. There was the SCP wiki, and he that was called the Foundation. So it was the SCP Foundation. But because he was now publishing it for real, he couldn't just use all everybody else's work. So he calls it the organization, and they're not SCPs. They're called unknowns. Oh, here's another first novel kind of stuff. All of the entries, they all have you 1536, you 0038. All of the monsters, all of the things that they're investigating, all have a number code rather than a name.
Mm-hmm.
And that is awful as an audiobook.
Mm.
Because
yes.
Every time it is, you just hear you dash and then a number. And you're like, I can't remember that number from the last time that you said the number.
Yeah. So it becomes irrelevant.
No, you just have to pick up from context what is the thing which is the thing with the U number that they're talking about right now. It's that, which is weird because I couldn't remember, and I'm like, oh, maybe it's intentional, so I can't always remember what's. And I was like, no, I think it's just bad writing. It's like if they were a proper author, they would have given these things a code name, to go along with just the random 3-4 digit number.
Yes.
And later on, one of them does get a code name or gets a name. And I'm like, this is great.
Yeah.
Now you're using human language to communicate with me through my human ears with this human audiobook narrator talking to me.
Yes.
Stuff like that. As the book goes on, this idea gets developed that they are fighting against something. The anti-mimetics division is fighting against something, but they don't know that they're fighting against it. But some of them have got like these half memories. They're like, yeah, there used to be like thousands of people working here in the anti-mimetics division, and now there's only like 70 of us.
Ooh.
Like, where's everybody else? And they're like, oh, I don't know. And you realize, oh, bad stuff has been happening. But
so it's kind of like you forget things also to avoid PTSD.
No. They are being like, when one of these people is killed by this whatever they're going up against, everybody just forgets about them because these are anti-memes. They are units of information or monsters or whatever. By camouflage, they camouflage themselves, or they don't need to camouflage themselves by anybody who sees them. They look away and they immediately forget them. There's no long-term knowledge of any of these things.
Right.
And that's why you can have these kaiju which exist on these islands, because everybody who ever sees them forgets that they exist.
Yeah.
They're just invisible. Like, that's what that monolith is. It just sits there in the countryside in England somewhere. And people just like root around it, and people just see it and then don't see it. They're like, hey, what's that? And just
then
forgetting it about it as well, like that.
Okay.
And then as the book goes on, it's, more and more of this stuff is revealed and then becomes like conspiracy kind of stuff, like who's working for who, what's doing. Then it gets into the really fun stuff near like in the last quarter of the book, which is like we've got all the rules set out. How do you defeat this?
Mm-hmm.
And then the book starts going non-linear and going, well, back in the day, nobody now knows about it because everyone's forgotten about it.
Yeah.
But 15 years ago, this happened. Here's a scene from 15 years ago.
So we get a bit of background.
Yes. Some background. No, but not background. It isn't background. It's actually story.
Ah.
But nobody in the current day knows about it because they've all forgotten it.
Right. So how do we get that information?
We have to go to another point of view.
Ah.
Like I say.
Right.
And some people do die in this book and point of view switch around.
Okay.
But don't worry. They're dead. They might be dead, but don't worry. We're going to go back in time and we're going to see more of them. But okay. They, in that time that they died, might have forgotten something.
Right.
But it's important for the story. So now we're going to go back. So we get this non-chronological, like, not just unreliable narrator, but like the most unreliable narrator, because the book is about not it being impossible for anyone to have any reliable knowledge about something.
Yes.
And to tell a story. But then they're still constructing a story, but they don't know why they've forgotten something. So maybe they'll tell themselves a story about why they might have forgotten something.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have to realize, oh no, I work for the anti-mimetics division. The reason I might not know this, maybe in the past I might have known. And so it becomes like the, you know, like, let's game it out, like board game, like, oh, a logic puzzle.
Yes.
Kind of thing where you've got to actually go through. Okay, in this case, right. In that case, great. And then as it goes even deeper in, it gets into my, like, the more philosophical kind of thing, like, what is an idea and what does it mean for an idea to exist? And
yes.
It gets into, like, I don't know, you could go like Platonic or whatever, you would like that next level up, in the same way that, you know, when I was talking about like Anathem by Neal Stephenson, it's sort of like, what if we like rewire the entire universe, mm-hmm, to act slightly different under these conditions?
Yes.
If we just take seriously the idea that an idea can be a separate thing that exists,
yeah,
and that what's in our real world is a reflection of that, a shadow on the wall of a cave of a truer ideal, and we're just seeing the shadow version of it. That's what we see here. What does it mean to be able to access that more ideal, or like the other idea version
of
it?
The original thing.
And it gets deep into some of that. Well, not
okay.
deep. It kind of nods at that kind of stuff.
Right.
By the time it gets to the end of
As soon
book.
As you mentioned yesterday, I, like, right from the beginning when you started off with this book, I had in my head, that sounds like Neal Stephenson kind of territory. And also William Gibson.
Well, more Neal Stephenson. He even did it in like Snow Crash, which is about like implanting, not implanting idea, but like ideas, which are like units, which shape things in their own. Right, have like the it's like a mind virus, but not a virus, you know, more than just a virus. It's sort of like, yes, this mimetic kind of stuff. So yes, once you get into this in fiction,
yes,
you can go as deep or not deep. This started off as sort of like, oh, body horror, gribbly, mm-hmm, something, a monster, mm-hmm, made out of fingers, and you're like, ugh. But by the end of it, it's gets a lot darker,
yeah,
and a lot deeper.
Okay.
And I would say he 50% sticks the landing.
Yep.
However, I'm going to give him like 9.5 out of 10 for effort, for just going for it. Like, for going, all right, let's play this all the way out. Let's game
Sometimes
this all the way out.
That's all you want.
Yeah, and that's what I got. And it wasn't too long. Let's have a quick look at the audiobook length. Yeah, 8 hours and 49, like nine hours. Nine-hour audiobook.
Good.
Pretty good narrator.
Yeah.
Narrated by, I mentioned this to you before, the narrator is Rebecca Calder.
Oh, yes.
And she also narrates an entire, it doesn't come up here. Oh, that's funny. She, in the app, in the Audible app, it comes up. It doesn't in this store thing as well. She narrated a whole series of books called Calder Books.
Yeah.
Did I mention that
before?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
So,
and a book that's called Rebecca.
And there's a book called Rebecca, and she narrated a book called Rebecca.
And a book by Rebecca.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Author Rebecca.
So yeah, pretty good audiobook narrator, breezy listen.
Nice.
Here's the issue. It is quite a lot of horror kind of bits and pieces in here.
Yeah, okay.
Which means that falling asleep to it, I had to switch over to another book.
Ooh.
I was like, this is not a book.
Oh, now that makes so much sense. In a few nights in a row,
you
have been very active in your dreams.
Nah, it's probably nothing like that.
You never know.
Here is, talking about dreams, there are some things which have come up here. Let me have a look at these notes here. Oh, yeah, Gigantus. The kaiju are called something Gigantus.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is just one of the ideas here, is that, again, I'm not sure if this is explicit in the book, but I think it's like implicit in the book,
mm-hmm,
is that the big bad thing which came along in this book, the main force that they're fighting against, can't remember the name, because it's like U3165 or whatever. It's bad deal. It uses Twitch streaming to spread its initial thing. Whatever. That's not an important
Very
point.
Very good.
But it's bad. It's coming over and it's taking over.
Yeah.
And Meanwhile, there are these giganta stuff, like the kaiju things that make people forget things.
Yeah.
Which nobody, also can nobody remember.
Yeah.
But those are being killed off because as soon as you start trying to study them rigorously, they die.
Right.
And so it's like the whales, you know, killing, like whales being killed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Which, but what I think is he's saying is that upsets the ecosystem, the, you know, the mimetic or the meme slash anti-meme ecosystem.
Yeah.
That these kaiju, these big kaiju, which were being killed off accidentally by people trying to study them, were the thing which was keeping these other bad ideas which could seep through in check.
Mm.
And again, I'm not sure, I can't remember if it was explicit, but I really like the idea that this is like, you know, that keeping these kaiju species healthy is that they're like, what is it, the cornerstone species, like they're the beaver. You know, if we reintroduce the beaver, there's less flooding. And you're like, wait a second, does that make sense? Like, yeah, because they make it all and there's
it
like
all
more,
connects.
More biodiversity, every like flood
and the
plains.
Wolves, because the wolves eat the
things. Where are the wolves again? And
it goes all the way down to the smallest insect.
Yeah, but then I was thinking, because we watched that Veritasium video about 1 billion heartbeats. It's all like these guys, these big monsters, but although they are a lot wispier, like the surface area is different, you know. Either way, what's my other note here as well? Oh yeah, post-COVID lockdown novel.
We talked about that.
I mentioned that as well. Yeah, there's some actually some interesting. Was it on this page? I'm just gonna have a look for the quotes on this book because there's often there's often quotes here. Where can I find the quotes? Editions here.
Goodreads is hiding things
Goodreads,
again.
It's, there's reviews. Maybe I just say quotes. Well, I'll click on the quotes page. There's, it literally says here. There's 48 quotes here. I'm never going to see that here as well. Yes. So this is something that comes up quite near the end of the book. And now I understand. I almost knew that this was going to be the highest, like the first quote.
Oh, right.
You know, the most quoted, or actually the most liked quote.
Yes.
It's this. But if we have learned nothing else, we have learned this. Humans can walk away from and forget anything. Civilization can go back to normal after anything. And I was like, oh, right, that's exactly what COVID. As soon as COVID comes along, and I was like, yes, we've done this before. And it even says, go back long enough. The civilizations can go through the same thing.
Yeah.
And they can just forget about it. They can repeat the mistakes. And then they're like, oh, and we'll just carry on like normal as though nothing's ever happened.
Yes.
And the Veritasium video that we watched yesterday, and it was saying, here's the line of life expectancy for humans.
Yes.
And it starts going up, and he says, there's a dip around about here for, and I was thinking, for World War One. And he was like, for the Spanish flu. And then it goes up, and then there's another dip for World War Two, and then it keeps going up, and there's like another slight dip for 2020 or whatever it is. Like that. And I was like, I thought that first dip was going to be for World War One, but it isn't. It's for Spanish flu, because of course, Spanish flu killed like 20 or 30 times as many people as World War One did, or, you know, or reduce their life, whatever it was going to be, like lots of people died.
And this is so fascinating because now our age and time, we know about so many things and we have written knowledge, we have research, we have all the things, and still we do, like, time repeats itself. It's literally the thing. And I always thought, like, what is it? Why is this happening?
So this is a book which can have fun with that.
Yeah.
And there is some pretty fun apocalyptic stuff going on in this book as well, which I don't need. Again, even everything I've said now, I haven't given away any story stuff. I'm just talking
about... And that's
now,
impressive for an eight-hour audiobook.
Yeah, I haven't mentioned a single character's name except, you know, U135. Yeah, what else did I want to... There was another... Oh, yes. Also, you're talking about dreams.
Mm.
In my dreams, I forget things. Like, because me in my dream is just in a situation.
Yes.
And then Luke's, like, conscious brain, like, you know, what do you call it? The lucid dreaming kind of guy goes through and goes, I know you're trying to have sex with this person, but remember you do have a girlfriend / wife. And then the rest of my dream is sort of like... Oh, yeah. And I'm like,
very good. Yes,
and
I have this too.
You have the same dream.
Yeah.
where you're trying to get off with somebody.
Mostly people like from my very like super far past, which is nothing. But yes.
Yeah, no, it's just random synapses firing. And suddenly you're like, so there is what I liked about this book is that dreamlike character of it, and there is some interesting like building on like a romance. There's like a fun meet cute kind of stuff.
Okay.
And there's some other kind of relationship stuff going on about it. Mm-hmm. But it really does latch onto like the horror of being with someone who is, who's got Alzheimer's or like some memory issues.
Oh, right, yes.
And I always understood, it was such a weird thing that when somebody goes, when you say, oh, hey, I know, Elka or whatever, and somebody says your mother's name, or like your grandmother says your uncle's name instead of your name.
Mm.
And you're like, oh, no, Jeff. No, I'm not Jeff. I'm Luke. Jeff is dead. I'm Luke. And that person hearing it is now hearing as though for the first time that Jeff, their brother or son or somebody, has died.
Yes.
And they're now, and so they're just having to
relive through the grief.
Yeah, suddenly have this grief thing going on. And you're like, so in the kind of like, so yeah, if someone's got like dementia,
yeah,
don't mention that like everybody that they know except you is dead.
Like, no, because for them, their reality is real.
Yeah.
So telling them the truth all the time is actually way more painful and bad rather than going along with it. It doesn't hurt them to tell, hey, Jeff has just went to the stores.
Yeah, no, I'm not Jeff. I'm Luke. Yeah, Jeff's not around. No, Jeff's not here. Whatever it's going to be.
Yes.
Like, I'm just saying names.
There's ways to do that.
From my own family, your own family, whatever it is. Again, it's not always like Alzheimer's. It can just be forgetfulness or whatever it is. But yes, this book, it uses like those, like put somebody in a like proper emotional place and then have them see someone who doesn't remember any of it, or do it the other way around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I like that playfulness in this book because from chapter to chapter, you don't need to be with the same person. You don't need to even have the same story.
No, because it's literally baked into the premises of the book, right?
So yes, the book. There is no anti-memetics division. I think I'm going to give it 4 stars because it is so fun. And it does like rewire your brain in a way. And I do have issues with the pacing and there are some writing issues. But I'm like, yeah, it's someone's first novel. But I'm going to give Sam Hughes / Quantum. The audiobook narrator says Quantum, so
yes, it's just
how
quantum.
You do the gamer tag / internet handle. So let's say 4 stars.
Nice.
Don't know if it's worth reading another book by this guy, because again, these first novels,
he's now a published author.
I'm just saying, it's like he's a published author, but often the next novel doesn't capture the same thing.
Yeah,
like we can listen to the audiobook of The Martian and it can be like an amazing fun experience to it, and then Andy Weir writes 2 more novels and the next one is a bit dumb and pointless, and the next one is also dumb and pointless in another way and makes many of the same first novel mistakes. I'm like, didn't you already write 2 novels which have been published and now 2 of them have been made into movies? Yeah. You'd think you'd have worked out how to write a novel by now, but nope. Still hasn't worked out what a story
is. Sometimes it's fun to just read one novel by one person.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And then that's it.
It could be that person has got one good novel in them. They used up their ideas. Great. 5 stars, 4 stars, whatever it's going to be for like a new novel.
Yeah.
And that they'll never hit that same height again.
But so far, that means that the nomination list of the Arthur C. Clarke Award for 2026.
Well, let's have a look at it.
It's quite a successful list.
For me, it's been 3 out of 3. Luminous. There is no anti-memetics division. And When There Are Wolves Again.
Yeah.
Very good. And there's like 3 other books. Dungeon Crawler Carl, which I will get to next / whenever I need to spend a new Audible credit.
Yeah.
The Dream Hotel, which I don't know anything about, and The Salt Oracle.
Okay.
Which I have seen. That was on other people's lists of good books from last year.
Okay.
So
nice.
I will check those out.
Cool.
Yeah.
What's going to be next?
Well, depends when we have some time to do another podcast.
Yeah, but first, we're busy.
But if you've got time and energy, I want to talk about Player of Games,
yep.
or The Player of Games,
yes.
which you've read and I've read.
I
We've
did.
Talked about it before, but yes. I'm enthusiastic about the book. So if you want to talk about Ian and Banks a bit more. And also, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I've read it. You've not read it. We can either wait for you to read it, or you can listen to me tell you all the reasons why I don't think it's very good and you shouldn't bother reading it. But you said you did want to read it, but then you have seen the movie, so you do know the story already.
Yes.
So it's just, you're just going back and reading the original text.
Yes.
Like the Odyssey. Do you want to see the movie or do you want to read the original? Like,
I would prefer to see.
Did you ever read the Project Hail Mary novel?
Yeah.
You did read it?
Yeah, we read.
So that's why when we were watching the movie, we were both like, ah. And when we turned it off and never got through it.
Yeah.
We got about a third of the way into it and like, yeah, we already know what's going to happen and this
yes.
just isn't doing anything. Okay, no. I was wondering because I was like, did I take away the end of that story for you?
No,
but
no,
I do remember.
We did read
we
it.
We both read it and yes. we reviewed it together and
yes.
I got into the reasons
so
why it didn't
So with The
work.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I started reading it as a library book.
Yeah, I know. And it returned
then,
and I read it as a library
then
book.
Then you read it and then it returned. And I had some troubles logging in or something.
Yeah.
And then I logged in and now I'm, fifth in line.
Okay, let's do it this way. Next episode, if you want to talk about Ian and Banks again, we can.
Yeah.
I understand it if you don't want to talk about Ian and Banks, another Ian and Banks novel again
mm-hmm.
for like the third or fourth episode about this on the
yes.
SOBAP. But if you want me to tell you all the reasons why I don't think The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is worth reading or a very good book, we could do that,
okay.
which I think would be an interesting thing.
Sounds an interesting thing. You can try to convince me not to bother with the book.
No, no, I'm
and
not saying don't bother. I'm
hole.
Just set. I want to set expectations of you
no,
rereading a book
I
from the 1970s.
I absolutely don't have expectations.
Okay, well, maybe that can be the next episode and we can record it anytime that you have energy and we have time, which
will
let's see
take
let's
a
see,
while probably.
Which is either it's either going to be in the next 36 hours or it's going to be in 3 weeks time because we got a summer holiday.
Okay, everyone expect the next thing to be in 3 weeks.
We're going away to the European Juggling Convention. I'm booked in the gala show. It's my
Ooh.
First time performing in the gala show of the European Juggling Convention.
And being probably booked.
Was it 21 years or something? No, 2006. Yeah, no, 20 years, isn't
yeah.
it? So the last time that we were in Slovenia for the European Juggling Convention was in 2005.
Yeah.
So that's 21 years ago. And
mm-hmm.
the last time I performed in the gala show at the EJC, European Juggling Convention, was 2006. So it's a 20-year return for me to the main
nice.
Stage.
Nice. It's going to be good.
Which is
I'm
good.
Looking it's forward to
it. It's the biggest
it.
Show at the biggest juggling festival of the year.
Going to meet friends, which I'm looking forward to.
And then we got a week's holiday in Slovenia.
Yes.
Which we did 2 years ago. We did 2 weeks in Slovenia. This time
yep.
we're doing 1 week.
Yeah.
But instead of moving around, we're just staying for a week in
yeah,
one area.
One place.
And then, and we'll be home. So look out for another podcast in about 2.5 weeks.
Yeah. Cool.
Let's
nice.
See how it goes. All right, that's it. If you want me to read a book, you can send me an email, luke@juggler.net, or head over to the SFBRP listener group on goodreads.com. And there's a thread there called Books I Would Like to See Reviewed. And I do think this one, There Is No Anti-Mimetics Division, was once referenced in that.
It makes sense.
In that list or in that thread. So
cool.
Check it out. You can follow me on Instagram. You can follow me on Instagram. Lots of juggling stuff there. Not much podcasting. Ballzoom, Blue Sky, and Mastodon. We're in all these places. Check out the show notes.
Yes.
And by show notes, I mean, look at your podcast player. There'll be some links to things in there. Thanks to our Patreon supporters. You can
yeah.
support us on Patreon.
Oh, thank you so much.
Patreon.com/Luke Burridge. I was also going to say lukeburridge.com/Patreon. I should make that redirect to Patreon. Maybe it does already. I don't know. Maybe I'm clever in that way. Who knows? Maybe past Luke was clever in that way.
Let's
All right.
See.
That's it from us. Anything else to say?
No.
All right. That's it. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.